But then finally, stage 3 comes. You move back above cloud 9, cloud 10. Because 10 is the number of testing and trial. So you have now gone through. And I don't know why they use cloud 9. 9 in the Bible is the number of judgment. Imagine they say, go on cloud 9. They didn't know 9 is judgment. And so you get back to third stage. Third stage is when you see everything nice about a person, then you see everything ugly about a person, and then you still can love the person. So at that stage, you're ready for marriage. And then we will bring a couple together and we say, have you quarreled before? And they say, yes. You see, a marriage will only last when you have the skills to handle negotiation. To handle disagreements. Because it's the small little things in a marriage that makes life difficult. Not necessarily the big, huge things. You don't need an atomic bomb to blow your marriage apart. All you need is a small little toy sting bomb full of hydrogen sulfide to be dropped. And that's all it takes. Those small little things that break a marriage up, an accumulation of them. Unforgiveness comes. And the heart begins to harden. And all the scars start happening. And since we are on this, before we close it and get back to Haggai, we always tell couples two things on both sides. And that is, there are many other things, but there are two things that in our conclusion, we always remind them. One for the husband, one for the wife. Or wife-to-be or husband-to-be. We say that for the husbands, two things they must always remember. If they want to make their marriage last. So number one is that we always remind the men that they must remember romance. On their wife's birthday or anniversary, don't send them a washing machine. Say, dear, this is your birthday present. No doubt it'll be useful. But if you give a lady a choice between a washing machine and some nice flowers, they prefer the flowers. Of course, modern ladies will like both the washing machine and the flowers. But I'm illustrating a point here that God has made ladies sentimental and romantic. Men are only romantic when they're in love. You look at many marriages. The first few years, the men are very romantic. By the 20th to 30th year, the man is reading his papers. Ask him when his wife's birthday. He says, I don't know. Anniversary passed by 3 times. He doesn't know. Dear, how long have we been married? He doesn't know. But it's the wife who remembers. Surprising. You ask any marriage, it's the wife who remembers how long they've been married. And all these things. So we always tell the men one important thing all their life. Men have to learn how to be romantic. Men have to learn how to cultivate these things. So for many businessmen, when they travel, when they go anywhere, well, if they were in love, they would buy cute things for their girlfriend. But when they are married, they forgot to do that. Why? Is the wife no more cute? So we always remind the men, learn how to maintain the fires of love and romance in their marriage. And that's for men, alright? Ladies, you can just eavesdrop. The second thing we remind the men is that all ladies, even the strong ones, if they are married, want the men to lead. They want the men to lead and be in leadership areas at all times, whether in the small things or the big things. Like, for example, one day I was traveling in a plane and we were about to land in Australia. And as usual, there are all these forms to fill. Declare this, and if anything, to declare any food stuff, everything. And you got to fill all these things. And so My wife and children were there, so I fill up everything all nicely, look their passport number, everything, and then pass to my wife to sign. Right, we were traveling as a family. So two seats behind us was this French man and his wife. His wife was having a little baby. And so when the forms got to them, he was filling. And then the wife was having a baby, trying to nurse the baby at the same time, and said, "Dear, fill for me." And the Frenchman said, turned around to her and said, "No, you fill yourself, you declare yourself." I could see the frustration in the wife. And but in small things and big things, like the opening of doors or the signing of these things, and all the wife do is just, see, ladies, inside them, there is still that built-in thing to lean on a man. It's in the book of Genesis 3. Lean on the man. Your desire will be for him. And lean on the man. And so they always, no matter how strong or capable they are, some are very capable. I mean, they will be very capable. But if they're married to someone whom they are supposed to be their spouse and life partner, they would like the person to do everything, and they just come and sign. It is a modern way of a knight in a white armor rescuing the lady in distress. But it's in a modern way that takes place. It's something that is there. And so I counseled long ago a couple who was married, and it so happened that the wife was more technical and organized than the man. And so in planning for their marriage and everything, the wife was doing all the phoning, planning, everything. And when it came to the premarital counselor, I could see all the frustration written on her face. Say, "What's happening?" Say, "He doesn't do anything." And of course the man said, "No, he couldn't, because he came from, he was a country boy. And not very sophisticated. And so he found it hard to organize, and she was doing all these things. But at least if he could try to find some way where he could show leadership, it would have helped her. And that was what we encouraged them to do. So number two, the lady always likes the man to show leadership at all times, to lead. And they be the one to come and be the one that, my wife used to say, more than conquerors. The husband do all the work, and the wife comes and enjoy. Right? So that's the second thing. Now for the wives, two pieces of advice. Number one is, many ladies, after they are married, they look different than before they were married. Unless they are working ladies. And many husbands, if they take a look at the wife after 3 years, they say, "Hey, this doesn't quite look like the wife I married." Fan, love it. See, near my office, we make friends with a lady who used to sell soya bean. We have known her for about 3-4 years. She sells soya bean curd. And we used to talk to her at times. Christmas, sometimes we try to get her some things. And so we knew her before she was married, and we knew her after she was married. So she is there selling things, and we used to, whenever we drop by there, we just chat with her. And she was what I call, not fully, the gorgeous, beautiful type, but a nice, pretty little lady. And so she dressed well, etc. And then, for a long time, we didn't talk to her or see her. And then, during a period of time, a few months, then we came back, we saw her, we talked to her. And when I look at her, I say, "Hey, she looks different," I told my wife. I say, "Why? Look, she doesn't dress as nice. And her hair was cut horribly. I don't know whether she changed her barber." Barbers can be very dangerous. Remember the story of my barber. Right? When I tell him, trim, it is short. Short is botak. Very dangerous. And they still make mistakes up to today. And so, maybe she changed her barber, but as we talked to her, we found out what happened. She got married. That's the thing that ladies need to understand, that even after you're married, you should have a certain pride of self-esteem, not so much pride, but self-esteem, to take care of your beauty and to watch yourself and for thy husband's sake. And so many wives, after they are married, they say, well, he knows me in and out already, so no need to make any makeup, no need to use anything anymore. And so, you know, from morning to night, always in your pajamas. Usually that never happens. Usually that never happens to a working lady. Because a working lady, they still go out and they still sort of pretty themselves out and then they go out. But a lot of them who stay at home, slowly they not only become housewives, they look like housewives. Which can be dangerous. So we always remind a newly married couple, we always remind a wife, remember two things. We say number one is remember you must care for yourself the same way that you used to care even before your marriage. Although we understand when the children come and when these things come, it's harder, we understand. But there need to be at least a minimum, right? Because remember, the person your husband fell in love with, sometimes what we do outwardly is a reflection of what is on the inside, our self-esteem. And the second thing we remind ladies is that they must respect their husband. And we talk about what the meaning of respect is. Like for example, if you are an employee working for an employer, if you see your boss making a mistake or doing something wrong, you don't correct your boss publicly, because by doing that you humiliate your boss. If it's a good boss who is open to suggestion, then you probably would go privately and say, boss, I got this thing to tell you, and you privately tell the boss, and you leave it at that. But you would never publicly in front of the other employees say, oh, the boss did this mistake and that happened. You would never do that. And that's what the Bible means in Ephesians 5 when it says reverence your husband. It means that in a marriage relationship, when the husband is the head of the home, never disagree with your husband in public. Just as you never disagree with your boss in public, it humiliates your boss. So it humiliates your husband. And so if you can disagree, we are not saying you can't, but do it in private, in the bedroom, so that when it gets hot, you can pillow fight. But that's the second thing we must take note. And you do not say wrong things or run down your husband in front of other people, because by doing that you make them look very, very small and feel very, very small. And later on it will affect that relationship. Right? Oh, better finish that part and come to Haggai. Now, we're speaking here about Haggai, and the people have become complacent. They have forgotten, the reason we illustrate with a marriage relationship is that we were saying that from the time the wedding bells rang until the time you meet Jesus, there are a lot of puddles along the way, a lot of rocks along the way, and the most important teaching in the Bible is how to overcome in the middle section. The Bible does extol good starters and good finishes too. But the middle part determines whether you really finish it. We know there are many parables like that. For example, in the parable of the prodigal son, in the end, his finish was good, but his starting and his middle was bad. And then he talked about the parable of the sower and the seed. It says that the seed that fell among the pavement, the birds of the air came and eat it. And he said it's like the type of people who receive the word, rejoice, leap for joy. But because they don't have root, they did not last. And the good soil is that in which they have roots. They were able to stay on in the wind and in the storm, in the hot and in the cold. The Israelites had a glorious Exodus. But at the end of Exodus, out of the original nearly 2 million people, only 2 make it.